The year was 1977. Jimmy Carter, a peanut farmer from Georgia, became America's 39th president. Disco became the sound of the times as Saturday Night Fever, John Travolta, and the Bee Gees were rocketed into the limelight. Two legends died, Groucho Marx and Elvis Presley. Meanwhile, an unknown 22-year-old actor with limited screen experience and surrounded by an all-star cast faced the tremendous task of creating a legend, the legend of the Man of Steel. With his beanpole build and inadequate muscle structure, Christopher Reeve saw himself as a strange choice initially for Superman, the original super hunk.
Except for sort of a strong jaw and clean features, I really had nothing else going for me physically. I immediately needed to deal with the fact that Superman is shaped like a triangle. He's got extremely broad shoulders, a very narrow waist. He's really, I don't know, whoever studied anatomy when they did it, they gave any actor an impossible problem just because they drew really pretty much a perfect man, you know? Perfectly muscled and not grotesque. He doesn't look like a heavyweight weightlifter. He doesn't look beefy and sort of, you know what I mean? He doesn't look like he came out of pumping iron. He really is a very classical looking man, like a Greek sculpture. And that's a problem, you know, because I look like a string bean, not a sculpture.
Reeve was determined to play the part without the aid of phony muscles. So he hired a bodybuilder, headed for the gym, and weightlifted his way to a more natural approach to the part. As Christopher Reeve went from string bean to classic Greek sculpture, Clark Kent must also go from mild-mannered reporter to Man of Steel. And that brings up the age-old problem of, how could anyone possibly not recognize that Clark Kent is Superman?
I felt that in playing Superman, I tried to be somebody who projects openness, calm. He stands at his full height. His eyes are very clear, and he completely looks out at people with calm and understanding. And he's extremely open. All the gestures are very fluid. When he flies gracefully. I mean, even to the extent of having the toes pointed, you know, from modern dance, that he flies either like a human jet or like an extremely graceful bird. You know, he can do anything from hover and make very beautiful movements to absolutely dynamic, you know, straight out old-fashioned stuff. Clark Kent is like you go to the blackboard and you erase all of that. And I would do with backbone control, which comes from something called the Alexander technique. I would shrink about 3 inches. Clark Kent's about 3 inches shorter than Superman. The shoulders become concave. The gestures become apologetic. The man is afraid to express himself physically. The clothes don't fit him, and he's insecure. He has a stutter. He has a Midwestern twang to his voice. He has asthma. He's got allergies. His glasses fog up all the time. I hope I put these things in without offending, you know, purists, but I do feel that there was not enough difference in the performance of the people who played it before, and we've been very, very concerned to give people something recognizable while at the same time taking them into new territory.
The new territory that Superman got into under the expert guidance of Christopher Reeve was welcomed by Superman fans of the 70s. Besides making the distinction between cautious Clark Kent and heroic Superman even greater, Reeve had another concern, the issue of updating.
I was also concerned to get away from an old-fashioned corny style, which worked for the 50s and worked for that style of movie. If Superman had a line something like, "Yes, Lois, and there's one last piece of unfinished business," I would change that to, "Listen, there's something I've got to do, I'll be right back," which is what a person would say, you know? And I see no reason why he can't be a person. He can fly, walk through walls, stop bullets, repair an earthquake, fix the Golden Gate Bridge. If you see the character actually do these things, then I think in the portrayal of the part you have to go underneath that. So I tried to play the whole thing with understatement, you know, way off that stuff, and make him somebody who's real and accessible, and also put the possibility of failure into every situation. The limiting factor of the television series, I thought, was that you never doubted the fact that he was going to show up. He would always get there on time. He would always take 2 bars and bend them apart. But why? Why should he? If he doesn't have it covered in every situation, if he doesn't always know the answer, then his achievements are that much more impressive.
Other impressive factors about the movie versions of Superman are super composer John Williams' Superman 1 score and British composer Ken Thorne's inspired arrangements of Williams' material for the Superman 2 soundtrack. We'll be right back. as most of us find music a welcome release these days, that's exactly what Superman provides as well.
And in these tough, anxious, uncertain times, what people do is they try to find a strong leader.
Dr. Linda Nelson, professor of sociology at the University of California, Los Angeles, explains.
We are looking for a messiah, in a way. They look for a strong, large-sized man. Superman, of course, is that type. Someone who is, in a sense, a kindly, moral, macho sort of person. An invincible leader who has a really get-tough attitude. Very get-tough. And when a population is faced with anxious, uncertain, tough times, and they're seeking this sort of leader, they'll often seek this leader in images of the past. Superman, for instance, has always been the same. There's something ageless about Superman. He reemerges and he looks pretty much like the comic book character that emerged in the late 30s.
Whatever the reason moviegoers around the world flocked to see the original Superman epic starring Christopher Reeve, somebody must have smelled success early on. It was decided back in the beginning to shoot two movies, Superman 1 and 2, simultaneously. This unique approach to filmmaking kept Reeve on the set for 18 months as the principal character in both films. Marlon Brando's role as Superman's father, Jor-El, required a far lesser period of time, only 12 days. However, it was sufficient time for Brando to give Reeve some sound advice.
He said, don't do your own stunts. I'm sort of in trouble here because I'm in the middle of flying rehearsals and I was planning to do it all myself. He said, listen, I was that way too. You know, when I finished Streetcar and I just come out west and, you know, thought I was hot stuff, I thought I'd do everything. You know, that was cool. And it came to a point in Viva Zapata where I was supposed to ride a bucking bronco. So I said to the people, I said, bring in the horse. What the hell? He gets on the horse and in 2 seconds is wiped out and lands on his head on the ground. And he says, right, bring me the other horse. The other horse was a sawhorse between two planks on the back of a truck. And he sat there and did that, and so much for stunts. You know? But, you know, he said, listen, it's only a movie, you know? And, if, you know, you fall on your head, say goodbye. It's not worth it. But I was too enthusiastic. I couldn't take that piece of advice.
I'm stronger than a locomotive. Yeah. That old saying is true. But I can't understand sometimes, baby, why I'm so weak for you. Yes, I can leap tall buildings in a single bound. When it comes to getting over you, baby, well, I can't get off the ground. But they call me the Superman lover, yeah. They call me the Superman lover, yeah. But something wrong with me, see.
If Reeve sounds almost as virtuous as Superman when he talks about his career, there's another member of the Superman cast who seems somewhat similar to the character in question. Canadian-born actress Margot Kidder sees a lot of herself in her impulsive on-screen identity, reporter Lois Lane.
She's a lot like me. She's very ambitious, very manic, very messy, very driven, and yet at the same time very, very vulnerable, which was not in the comics. She was not really vulnerable in the way that I put it. She's sort of klutzy vulnerable and sort of goofy, funny vulnerable.
Just as Kidder describes herself using mental pictures of Lois Lane, she describes the terrific relationship she enjoyed with co-star Christopher Reeve in terms of one big happy family. Well, most of the time.
Chris and I are very close. It was like having a brother after that long a time. But as in any family, you get to bickering, you know. And we were shooting a part of the sequence where we fly around, and we were in the position of being 40 feet above the ground, strapped together with safety harnesses and unable to get away from each other. And they'd taken this tower out that had got us up there. And filming the sequence, I mean, there was no escape. You were up there for 2 hours. And we started to fight. And the crew was below, 40 feet away, sort of dumbfounded, not knowing quite what to do. And then they'd go, action! And we would look at each other totally fondly in love and fly along and do our... They cut and we went right back in it. And finally, the ludicrousness of it hit it, and we started to laugh. There was no way anyone could stride off. We were stuck there.
Look, look, up in the sky, come on, just look, look, and you'll see me flying by.
One actor in the Superman ensemble of players who would have more than his share of trouble taking his outfit off, Gene Hackman, who plays Lex Luthor with the aid of an elaborate skull cap.
The ball cap took about 2.5 hours to put on. You put a ball cap on and your head perspires. So they have to leave the back of it open and to let the sweat pour out. And I had long hair that I had to keep to match other scenes that we'd already done. So it was a mess. But really, it was a tough time for me. I'm very grouchy at that point, too.
Lex Luthor is the warped scientific genius who's been tormenting Superman since the comic book days. But happily, he always seems to lose out to the Man of Steel. Academy Award winner Gene Hackman had a lot of fun bringing the fiendishly clever criminal to the screen.
I approached it as a kind of maybe a high-class used car salesman. That he was the kind of a guy who would do anything to make a sale. More than likely, this is the way he started it. And used cars or real estate on a very low level. And became so kind of infatuated with himself and his own intelligence that he put together this monstrous scheme to take over the world.
Hackman had a field day with Lex Luthor, especially in Superman 2, because that's where humor overtook evil.
Hello there. Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor. Possibly you've heard the name, the greatest criminal mind on Earth.
I told you this was a puny planet.
Wait just a moment. Wait. You get to know me better, will you, please? Wait! Look, I can give you anything you want. I can give you the brass ring, unlimited freedom to maim, kill, destroy.
We have all of this without you. You cannot bargain with what you don't have.
Magnificent one, what I am bargaining with is what you do not have. Superman.
Revenge. We will kill the son of our
jailer.
Revenge.
Revenge! We're cooking, huh?
He flies, then?
Constantly.
He has powers as we do?
Certainly, but, magnificent one. He is just one. Or you are three. Or four, if you count him twice.
We will bring him to his knees.
Wait! First you must find him. And Lex Baby is the only one who knows where he is.
Valerie Perrine plays Lex Luthor's dizzy girlfriend in both Superman movies.
She's outrageous. Lex has a bald head, so he wears different wigs all the time. And every time he wears a different wig, she wears a different wig. She has red hair and blonde hair, and she wears Cartier jewelry and skin-tight pants and push-up bras. Just really sort of stupid, dumb sidekick.
As Eve Teschmacher, she helps Luthor make an almost bumble jailbreak in the latest adventure. The actress couldn't help but see Gene Hackman's comic side as he played bad guy Lex Luthor. Perrine says that's basically because Hackman's just not the criminal type.
Well, see, when I saw him acting as Lex Luthor, I saw Gene underneath it all. And he's kind of a lovable evil man because Gene is so lovable. There's a scene where Lex, he's got the bald head, like he's in jail, and he doesn't have his wig. And when we were filming it, it was the birthday of the makeup man. One morning, he just put the thing on, and went and got a candle, and attached it to the top of his head and lit it, and went in singing happy birthday to the makeup man. When every time you see Lex Luthor in the bald head, that's all I can think about, is Gene Hackman with the candle on his head.
Hackman does have the ability, apparently, to crack up cast members right and left. Even the stoic Superman succumbed to one of his great comic lines.
And I remember one time in particular when most of the foreign press was assembled on the stage watching the shooting. The French and Italians and Germans and Japanese had flown in. They were watching. They'd the first time they'd ever been allowed on the set. And we were doing a bit in which it called for me to rip open a lead trunk. I was off preparing for the scene in which I have to deliver some line to him, like I'm going to take this box and melt it down and mold your prison bars out of it, or you know, something like that, and rip open the lid of this trunk and deal with the fact that, of course, the inside is kryptonite. So we got to the scene, and I'm preparing and getting all worked up and everything, and I think he could see a level of tension working up in me. And on film, on the take,
I came over to the box, said my line to him, I'll mold this box into your prison bars, went to open the lid, and it was nailed shut. And he just stepped over very casually to me, and looking straight at me, said, "Sissy."
Coming up, once you've seen him fly, what on earth can he do for an encore? The year is 1981. The price of gas has risen faster than a speeding bullet. Professional athletes are now more powerful than locomotives. Violent crime and inflation have become the number one issues in a single bound. Man has conquered space. 52 American hostages are released from 444 days of captivity in Iran. The music war is on.
On the road again.
It's country versus new wave.
The Whippy-Turn!
A former actor, Ronald Reagan, is sworn in as 40th President of the United States. And another actor, Christopher Reeve, has become a household word as Superman 1 ends up the most popular film of 1979. A motion picture about a legend has become a legend. And now the question is, can Superman 1 be topped? Will the adventure be continued? Director Richard Lester, who's handled everything from the Beatles' Hard Day's Night to the daring exploits of the Three Musketeers, takes on Superman 2.
The first premise was that in Superman 1, the audience came and saw a man fly. In Superman 2, they have already seen that, and they're saying, okay, of course he can fly, now show us something else.
Of course, something else isn't always that easy to come by. But thanks to the terrible trio of Kryptonian villains pitted against Superman, and the intimate love story that finally emerges, Superman 2 is every bit as exciting and amazing as the first chapter, and a lot more besides. This time around the galaxy, the Man of Steel faces not just one archrival, but a trio of the most deadly supervillains in the world. A fearsome threesome who were once banished from their home planet Krypton to the empty existence of the Bantam Zone. However, the three Kryptonian bad guys are sprung from their jail cell in the Cosmic Void by a bizarre coincidence triggered by Superman himself. And here's what the Man of Steel unwittingly unleashes on our unsuspecting planet. The sinister, sensuous Ursa, a vision in black leather, played by British actress Sarah Douglas.
I told you this was a puny planet.
The doltish brute Non, brought to life by 6'8" ex-heavyweight boxer Jack O'Halloran, as a roaring, snarling Hulk.
He doesn't speak. He is half animal and half human, but he has a very compassionate side of him. He's like a child in his thinking capacity, and he has the strength of, like craziness,
And the vision of evil incarnate in Superman 2, the unrelenting, unredeemable General Zod. The most vicious, violent nemesis in Superman's entire career, played with great cunning and cruelty by the classically trained actor Terrence Stamp.
This guy should make Hitler look like Mickey Mouse. This guy is really bad. There's nothing redeeming about him at all. So don't think that he's going to be glamorous or romantic. He will be, as ugly as we can make him and as horrific as we can make him. He's an absolutely negative fire element, he's really dangerous.
When the three black-hearted and black-clad interplanetary criminals land on Earth, they are at first mistaken for tourists from Los Angeles. However, it's mere moments before this illusion is shattered, as they demonstrate their powers are equal to those of Superman.
For me to go up against Terry Stamp, it's like Joe Frazier going against Ken Norton. It's two heavyweights who are equal, so that it neutralizes the strength of all the material objects around. So if a bus is thrown at me by another villain, then that's got the weight of a real bus. It's just we step into a new kind of convention there that the audience has to believe. So if I get a punch in the face from Ursa, man, it hurts. It hurts like crazy. But I never hit a woman. And one of the reasons I do get injured very badly in this fight is because she's about to hit me with a flagpole. I turn around ready to punch whoever it is in the face, and I see that it's a woman, so I delay. And meanwhile, that gives Nod a chance to kick me in the head. Superman's a decent guy 24 hours a day.
General Zod and his co-criminals finally do get a crack at Superman, director Richard Lester says that's where the real challenge is.
Obviously, any sequence where you throw buses at people and destroy part of Metropolis is not easy. And there was one major sequence, which is what we call the wind sequence, where the three villains blow the inhabitants away. But it was not as difficult as some sequences, which to the audience will seem very simple, like one man in the sky kicking another man in the sky. The actual technique of having both of them flying at the same time and making contact one to the other with the techniques that we use to make people fly. Because despite what some think, Christopher Reeve is not a natural flyer.
Fly to
the more human side of Superman 2, the developing romance between Lois Lane and the Man of Steel, has some quite intimate scenes, like when Superman wants to do something really special for Lois. Christopher Reeve admits there was an ulterior motive behind this sequence.
It was the middle of winter, and we really needed to get out of London for the winter and stuff. So we decided that what we really needed was a scene where Superman would go someplace really beautiful and get a flower for Lois. We needed something romantic. This was my idea. We've got the joke about him coming in with a bag of groceries saying, "I'm home," which is a good send-up. But he needs to have some flower that you've never seen in your life, you know. Or he should go to Italy for a bottle of wine, you know, be right back. So we just thought he needed to go someplace great. Where should we go? Well, how about St. Lucia? You know, it's only 8,000 miles away or something like that. So we talked the producers into an 8-day vacation in St. Lucia for two shots, one parrot and one waterfall, and that's it. And we all went, 50 people went to St. Lucia to get this shot and came back. It was tremendous. And that shot is so romantic, the idea that this guy would go to the tropics for a flower and come back in 2 seconds. I mean, it's necessary, but at the same time, I remember that we were cooking up a vacation, too.
Kent and Lois Lane also get a working holiday when their boss at the Daily Planet, Perry White, sends them on an assignment to Niagara Falls to uncover a honeymoon hotel scandal. But Lois is more intent on uncovering Superman's real identity, and she's convinced she just made a huge mistake suspecting Clark Kent.
Boy, I sure must have looked like an idiot, jumping in the river waiting for Mr. Wonderful, who obviously had better things to do.
I'm sure it must have been something very important, Lois.
And I'm thinking that you were... Harry White can see me now. Where's my comb? God, not only have I lost my mind, I've lost my comb. Clark, can you pass me that brush over there, please?
Sure.
A clumsy stumble, and Clark lands in the fire. In more ways than one.
Let me look at it.
Does Clark Kent let Lois Lane see his hand is unburned? Does she really find out who Superman is once and for all? Christopher Reeve believes Clark Kent and Superman really want to be found out.
People who are accident prone are generally trying to be noticed. And in a larger sort of way, that's what's happening with Superman, is he's trying very hard to keep a handle on the reality that I must not let anybody know.
but it's coming out by itself. You know, it makes little mistakes. He desperately wants to be discovered.
So, the stage is set for Superman's greatest challenge ever. Zod, Ursa, and Nan seek only total domination and destruction. To take over the entire world and all its inhabitants, they swear they'll stop at nothing, not even complete annihilation, to reach their goal. And when Superman chooses to step in their way, so much the better. Does Superman let that happen? Does the impossible romance that the world has watched unfold ever so slowly over all these years finally come to flower? That's an answer that only Superman 2 can provide. In retrospect, Christopher Reeve thought about the legendary Man of Steel and why he's managed to outlive all the other superheroes for almost half a century.
I think it must have something to do with the fact that the character himself is, in very simple psychological terms, is dead accurate in terms of how people want to see themselves. Clark Kent is a kind of exaggerated portrayal of who we really are, and Superman is the fantasy that we dream about when we're alone. To have both of these wrapped up in one person is too good to be true. You're planting a lot of very powerful images with people, having to do with roots and heritage and fantasy and fulfillment. Flying is a very powerful attraction to people too. It's a sexual metaphor. But all these things combined in one person is very, very rare. And that's why he's so fascinating. People are looking at their dreams when they look at Superman. He's the original.
History of Superman Radio Special was written by Laurie Kay and Peter Rubenstein. Produced by Ron Hummel. Program concept and direction by Peter Rubenstein. This has been a Riches and Rubenstein production in association with Klein Mednick Productions. For the History of Superman, this is John Leder.
Tune in again for the next thrilling episode with Superman.